And I'll be having Cassandra, Joy and Montana and Estrella. And they're with the Water Trough Children's Alliance. And we're going to be talking about apples to grapes conversion, which is going on Water Trough, just near the school campuses of five campuses. And we're so lucky in the West County to have some, not just organizations, but the public who band together and make concerned organizations. And tonight we'll be talking to some of the members who have done just that. That's the Water Trough Children's Alliance. And, well, there is one child here, I must admit, but there is three adults as well. We have Cassandra, Joy, and Montana. And Montana is the younger, just so everyone knows, and Estrella. Welcome, and you are part of the Water Trough Children's Alliance. You have children in the school at the Twin Hills District, at the Apple Blossom District, and maybe give some backgrounds of how this all came about so that you had to form this alliance. When did this happen, and what were the warning signs, and what happened?
Sure. Well, this is Joy here. Yes. And I found out when the barn and houses and buildings at the property on 622 Water Trough Road, when those were being torn down by workers in hazmat suits. And it sort of alerted this chain reaction of not all of the parents, but some of the parents. And I immediately went to the local Waco BB forum and found out, wow, they're converting it to a vineyard. And that's when I started emailing all of my friends, and I saw the petition. And then Estrella emailed me back and said, this is what we're doing. Join us. And I said, okay, I'm in.
Okay. just so you know, I did ask a representative of the Paul Hobbs Winery to join us either by phone or in the studio, and she has a family engagement, Tara Sharp, so couldn't be here. And I did also ask the school administration for an interview request, and they have not replied, and that was a few weeks ago. So we're down to you guys.
Here we are.
You need to tell us what's going on. And so you have a school, actually five campuses out there on Water Trough Road in between basically Sebastopol and Occidental here. Now, what are the schools there on the campus?
There is Apple Blossom, Orchard View, Treehouse Hollow Preschool, Sunridge, and is it?
Nonesuch.
Thank you.
Oh, Nonesuch. Okay.
And we are, Nonesuch and Sunridge are directly across the street and downhill from the proposed vineyard. And the other three schools are bordered directly by this property on three sides. Mm. So it's a big deal. There's 700 children plus faculty and staff on these campuses. And there are people there year round. It's not mm-hmm. just a school year issue. It's summer long. There's summer camps and soccer and things that happen there all year where faculty and children will be affected by chemical drift and pesticides, right, you know, from the conversion and after.
Right. And now, which school does Montana go to? Hi, Montana.
Hi. I go to Orchard View.
Okay. It's a good school?
Yeah.
Enjoy it? Good kids and teachers?
Yeah. It's a charter school. Mm-hmm. I go there 2 days a week. And the rest of the week I'm homeschooled.
Oh, lovely. That's a nice mix. Oh, very nice. Well, thank you. We'll talk more about what it's like at school in a little bit, but thank you. And how many acres is the proposed winery?
Proposed winery is on a 47.6-acre apple orchard right now.
Okay. And the schools are literally enclosed on three sides by it.
It's Pac-Man eating a snack.
Okay.
With a road on the fourth side.
The visualization of it, yes. Okay. Paul Hobbs Winery, are they, can you tell us something about them? Are they local? Are they international? What is their background?
From what I know about Paul Hobbs Winery is they are Their headquarters are based in Sebastopol. However, Paul Hobbs himself is not local. They are a multinational corporation. They own, you know, he owns lands in Argentina. They're, you know, a lot of the wines aren't used just for local. It's not a local artesian vineyard. You know, they don't practice organic farming methods. They are conventional grape growers of medium market wine. I, you know, I'm not a wine expert here, but you know, my love is apples. And so what I know about Paul Hobbs Winery and what I've heard is through local press, and his reputation tends to precede himself a little bit, I think, in our community. And you know, with this instance of this conversion, we are hoping that he can use this as an opportunity to create better wine by going organic, to create inroads in the community by maybe donating a buffer zone to the school, you know, and leaving an organic 300-foot buffer zone into his property for us to manage and maintain, and then he can have his grapes. I mean, we're realistic in working with the property owners and finding a mutual solution that's good for the community, good for the school and the children, and can possibly help the vineyard as well.
Right. Well, yeah, that sounds good. I went to the meeting on Wednesday at the Sebastopol Grange, and it looked like a done deal, though. I mean, that sounds wonderful, and that's where we should go, possibly. But the reality is what right now?
I think in terms of, this is Cassandra, I think in terms of the VESCO permit, it's most likely a done deal. I think the agricultural commissioner explained it's a ministerial process. There's no room for discretion. If they meet the criteria, they can proceed. And that's partially why the landowner is so pertinent in this case. It could be any landowner, but because there's no agency to step in, we're left with a good neighbor negotiation. So in some ways, the owner is totally irrelevant, but in this case, it's completely important. And irrelevant in the sense that there's going to be other schools that are also bordered by agriculture who are going to have different neighbors.
Right.
So if we had policy in place, you wouldn't be at the mercy, for lack of a better word, of a good neighbor negotiation.
Well, that's what it seems, that you've exposed a real gap in our protections in this, that there is no protection for schools or anything from agricultural spraying.
There's nothing directly addressing this situation. And we kind of are looking at the situation in two parts, one being the conversion and the second being future management practices. And there doesn't seem to be anyone that directly speaks to it. We have contacted many agencies and be happy to go through those and talk about which ones can step in to help.
We have a caller, and she has some doubt about there not being any laws in place. So hold on one second. Hello, Anne.
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome, and welcome to the discussion. And we were just talking about the that there was specifically a gap in the law about that, but you're saying it's not necessarily so?
Right. My name's Anne Maurice, Ad Hoc Committee for Clean Water, and I've been active in Sonoma County and going to Sacramento as well, involved with vineyard, grape, pesticide issues for, you know, I hate to say, it's got to be 25 years. And I was at the meeting the other night, and I'm really impressed by these women. I think it was an all-woman panel who have decided to really try and do something. And I think the fact that it's five schools surrounded by vineyard will give them some incredible attention, incredible clout. And I spoke to maybe three of the people, and I think Cassandra, and I didn't really get the names of the others, about a pesticide regulation regarding overspray that is being ignored. And all they have to do is to Google it. In fact, if you Google it, you will see 6614, California's pesticide regulation regarding overspray, ignored. Somebody's titled it that way. And what it is it states very clearly that no pesticide shall be applied or continue to be applied if there's a reasonable possibility of contaminating essentially it says neighboring property. If you think about that for a minute, in other words, it says if there's a reasonable possibility of contaminating adjoining property, it doesn't say people have to drop dead, people have to be sick. It says if there's a reasonable possibility, you don't do it.
Is that a state law?
Yes, it is. It's part of the California Code of Regulations.
And who does regulate that and police that?
Our local agricultural commissioner. So quite frankly, I was shocked, okay, because we've had these discussions 10 years ago, 15 years ago, people were talking, saying this. It was like a deja vu all over again. If you, I am coming to this meeting, and here are people talking about hazmat suits adjacent to schools, adjacent to kids on tricycles. We've been round and round that.
Yeah. Well,
the problem is people don't know what laws there are out there to protect them and aren't forcing the agricultural commissioner to enforce these laws.
Well, what does he say when he's asked to enforce the laws?
Well, they can speak to this. I'd say, number one, I was shocked that they didn't know about it. Okay, now he did address it after I got up and tried in the 1.5 minutes that was allocated to talk about it. But, you know, it's very difficult when you introduce a new concept. But basically, even if the ag commissioner agrees to enforce it, what he talks about is after the fact.
Exactly.
In other words, once the spray happens, if there's an incident, they go to collect samples of the powder that's on the window. But that's not what actually the law says. So really, we need some people to sit down and take a good look at it, because from my point of view, they're being bumped sideways, told there's nothing you can do, it has to be voluntary compliance, you have to start with the legislature, and I think they're just being given a, what do you call that?
The runaround.
A snipe hunt, the runaround. Right, and it's been going on for 20 years, and I've been talking about 6614, and then what happens is we have our local officials come behind me and say, no, it won't work. It doesn't.
Well, it's safety in numbers, and I think there's a lot of people now who know what's who is aware of this, and I think you need to work with everybody, because this is a critical, totally critical, if there is some leverage. Cassandra, can you add something to this?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I did have the pleasure of speaking with Anne the other night and got this information from her, and am in the process of following up on it. I think what it comes down to is whether the agricultural commissioner has the ability to enforce pesticide use or regulate pesticide use. And the state has said that he absolutely, under no circumstances, has the right to regulate pesticide use. So I'm not saying it won't work. I'm saying I need to.
Where did you get that, though? Who told you that? The agricultural commissioner himself?
Well, no, this isn't in saying that it won't work. This is saying that we need to get really informed on it and come to him in a very informed way. And I'm in the process of doing that, and so appreciated your suggestion.
Okay. And the other thing I want to say is, I think this ministerial process should also be challenged, that you also are being given a bum steer on that one, because how could there not be discretion? In other words, you know, and you've said very eloquently, that they can choose, they can elect, they can use their discretion and decide whether or not to apply pesticides or to go organic or to go non-pesticide or no spray. So my argument is, yes, there is discretion involved. They can do it or not do it. And also, the track record is, we had a major overspray issue going on here, a potential of spraying the entire state of California with Lorsban in 2000, I think it was, for the glassy wing sharpshooter. I was part of a group of people that stopped it. And we stopped it by forcing the California Department of Agriculture to look at it as a discretionary move and apply the California Environmental Quality Act. So we have that as a precedent. They'll try to tell you it doesn't apply to agriculture.
Right.
You see, and that's what I'm saying. That's why it was so important that it did apply for the glassing wing sharpshooter. So anyway, I would love to work with the Water Trough Alliance, you know, to have 5 schools surrounded by vineyard that doesn't intend to curtail spraying, and for parents to have to go hat in hand, so to speak, and ask for voluntary. There's something obscene about that. I mean, it should be so obvious that this is not something that anybody should do. but I know that 6614 applies and it should be interpreted correctly, and he should be. And just one other thing. Do you know, sometimes, was it Roosevelt who said to the Pullman Porter guy, when he said, look at the discrimination that's going on, he said, yes, I agree with you. Now make me do it.
Right.
Sometimes the politicians and the bureaucrats need people like them to step up to the plate.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Andrea. I really
Thanks
appreciate
your
input.
The time.
And, keep helping. Yeah, some great point. Maybe we should go backwards a bit in terms of the effect. There's a few different things are going to be happening at the school. Obviously, it's an orchard right now, and that has to be dug up even before the grapes get put in. And I know there's an impact there. Could you tell us about that effect?
So when conversion happens in an agricultural situation, there are many opportunities to create dust. And in this particular situation, there are a lot. And the biggest one is when the trees are going to be removed, which is basically dragging a tractor through the property and ripping the roots out. There are a lot of things that one can do to mitigate that kind of problem with the dust. And we've contacted the school district hoping that they will take our recommendations to heart so that they can request Hobbs to do as many of these requests that we have on their property to mitigate that. Yeah, so it's not only just the dust, but also the history of the soil that comes up when that dust is blown into the air. So apple orchards in the United States, and many orchards and many agricultural properties around pretty much anything before the 80s, was using lead arsenate, DDT, other really serious toxins. And these are just, you know, blatantly known carcinogens, endocrine disruptors, all the bad things. We don't use them anymore. They're illegal in our country. And they're still present in the soil.
Yeah.
And it's fairly ubiquitous. There are a lot of other states that have the same problem. And in this case, there has been soil testing done, and indeed, though there are quantifiable amounts in the soil, so it does exist there, and the dust is inevitable. So we're just wanting some measures put in place to at least physically protect the school from this dust that is inevitable. There's the EPA, the Pesticide Regulation Board, the Agricultural Commissioner, they all have these papers written that say dust is inevitable. And that's a fact.
Right.
So we don't want it to happen at all. We don't want it to be we call when there's an incident or and then somebody comes and steps in. We want to make sure that it doesn't happen at all. No dust, no pesticide drift incident.
Well, soil samples, it was talked about at the meeting on Wednesday. What is happening about that? And is that literally going to happen before it happens, or is it, again, going to be something that comes afterwards?
Well, so we have asked Paul Hobbs Winery, in this case, if they would be willing to conduct comprehensive soil tests. The soil test that Estrella mentioned was done, was minimal. It was done not in a particular way that relates to past agricultural practices, and in order to really know what's on the land, you'd have to do a comprehensive test. So we've asked, we've gotten no commitment. There is discussion we've heard, and I've been informed by Tara that she is talking to Tony Liniger, the agricultural commissioner, but we don't have a commitment at this point. There's some other agencies with which we're working to try to have that addressed, one of them being the Public Health Department.
Right. And mitigation efforts, is that spraying down with water?
Exactly.
Is primitive as that, basically?
So the Bay Area Air Quality Management District has a lot of papers out on dust mitigation measures, generally directed at asbestos, naturally occurring asbestos in the soils as well as other toxins. And you can hose down the soil during work. You can pre-wet the soil to a certain depth that you think the soil will be disturbed. In this case, I don't know how deep the apple roots go. We know that the toxins could be within the first 12 to 18 inches of the soil. So pre-wetting, spraying while you're working, you can put up windscreens. You can also just make an absolute solid commitment to end work if dust is leaving the site due to wind or uncontrollable measures.
Well, that's one thing, just the dust obviously.
Sort of after, dust is if the conversion begins. The soil's testing is prior to the conversion, and let's find out what's in the soil. Right. If it's okay, wonderful, great news. If there are hot spots, let's get them cleaned up, you know, remediated, removed, whatever it takes. That's not an area of expertise we claim to have, you know, but let's proceed with the knowledge that it's not going to be toxic as opposed to taking the risk.
Right.
And then dust mitigation is just, all right, we're proceeding. Let's try to make it as least harmful as possible.
Now, do they, after that it's done, do they fumigate the soil before they, or do anything else with it before they even plant?
I believe that the winery has said they are not going to be using any fumigants, that they were just going to be cutting them down and then ripping them out and chipping them to use as mulch. So they're not planning on burning as far as I'm concerned, as far as I know, right? There's no burn.
Okay.
So that's a good sign. That's a good thing.
Okay.
We like that. However, you know, the point of this is that the holes that Cassandra was mentioning, why should we have to, we shouldn't have to wait to call after the incident.
Right.
We need something in place now, and a lot of talk has been going on about different legislative initiatives that can be pushed through, and all of these take time, and you know, we're ready to sort of fight that battle, but for right here and right now with this orchard, you know, we have to work with what we have, and that's the school administrator, Barbara Bickford, and the property owner, Paul Hobbs Winery. So we sort of just have to keep at them both to keep the information flowing towards us. It's not been an easy process. The school administration has not been forthcoming with information to parents at the schools. We haven't gotten any sort of, I mean, I still haven't received an official anything from the school as to what's happening. You know, it's been us pushing them to tell the students and tell the parents. And I do believe there was a letter drafted by the Twin Hills Union School District that was kept at the front office. And as long as you asked for it.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, and now it's on the webpage. Okay. It's on the webpage
okay.
now. So, but as long as you asked for it, you could get that letter. It wasn't sent home in any sort of Friday flyers or anything like that. So communication is lacking there, and we're hoping that will change.
I hope so. And pretty basic. And I think at the meeting, it was, I think that came out. That there was it sounded like to me, listening, that there were many meetings that happened between the winery and the administration that you weren't, anybody else was privy to.
Yeah, I think there are some parts of the school district that are attempting to participate and to keep us informed.
Yeah, what's your name?
In any way that they can as well.
Thank you, Cassandra. Yeah, we have Pamela on the phone, and she'd like to chat. Hi, Pamela.
Hi. Wait, let me just turn my radio down.
Yes, please.
I'm not on Water Trough Road, but I'm in a small neighborhood in Occidental, and there's a 32-acre vineyard going in front of my home, and the noise I have to deal with almost every day, and I feel the lack of concern by the vineyard owner for the water-scarce area where I live is very unsettling. And I've lived in West County for 30 years, and I've noticed in some of my neighbors that streams and creeks are drying up earlier. And a person who's lived on this street all his life, and he's in his, I guess, late 40s now, says our wells will most likely dry up in 3 years. My neighbors and I met with the Ag Commissioner this past Tuesday, and he said we should begin to monitor our wells. And in the 24 years we've lived here, we've never had to do that. And another thing that I feel is incredibly tragic is the loss of habitat for animals. I was the humane educator at the Humane Society in the 90s, and I talked about habitat loss with children back then, and it's certainly gotten more and more tragic. And where I live, the deer used to at least have minimal corridors, and now I don't know if probably they just have very few. And I do want to say that my experience with alcohol was very frightening. In February 2012, I was hit by a very drunk driver coming home to Sebastopol on Llano Road, and my car was totaled, and it was a true miracle that I wasn't. And so I feel that another thing about these wineries is I feel that alcohol divorces, consumed frequently, it divorces you from your feelings, your environment, and certainly it makes you less conscious if not used in a, you know, in a conscious manner. And I have taught students of all ages in Sonoma County to write poetry for, 25 years. And I believe that many adults don't understand or even know how aware kids are of what is happening, not just in our environment, to environments everywhere. So if you feel okay about it, I'd like to read two very short poems that my students have written. Would that be okay?
Yes, if they're very short, thank you.
Yeah. It's called Man's Last Letter. In a land of chaos, darkness has risen, light has fallen. Where animals have lived, there are only a few survivors and a whole lot of darkness, no dreams, just nightmares, no mountains, no trees, no plant life, no animals, where we have to live in a collapsed land.
Who was that by?
I probably shouldn't say the name on okay. there. It's a local child. Okay. He lives in Occidental. And, oh, people, what have we done? The animals came, now they are gone. Oh, people, what have we done? Oh, please come, look what we've done. We've polluted the world, now everything is gone. So that's from the first is from a fifth grader, and the second is from a sixth grader.
Well, thank you very much, Pamela. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Please, Joy.
I would love to speak about the water issue just
yes.
briefly. I'm looking for land myself, and I have a small farm, and we're looking to expand that. And, you know, when we're looking for property, water comes up a lot. And okay. in my research, you know, it's the owner that has the most money can dig the deepest well. And then,
right.
and it's a very, you know, it's a very little regard for the neighbors. And I feel like that especially in the West County, that, I mean, when we moved here from the Midwest, we moved here from Madison, Wisconsin. And I just felt that there was this great sense of community here and knowing your neighbor and supporting your neighbor and helping each other. I mean, that's been my experience since living in Sonoma County, and I love it. And that's why I choose to make this my forever home. But you know, when we have these big corporate farms, I mean, it's one step away from factory farming in my mind. They're coming in, they're raping the land, they're taking the water with very, you know, little regard to the community, and it's sad.
Yeah. Perhaps we can, we're talking about children, perhaps we can bring in Montana to the conversation. Hi, Montana.
Hi.
Now, now you're at school there, and maybe you can give us an idea, when you go out to play, after you're doing your classes, when you're playing in the playground, what type of things do kids do when they leave the classroom and go and play?
So we have a basketball court. So and a kid in my class he's on a minor league baseball team.
Oh yeah.
So he kind of teaches mini baseball lessons. I run around with a few of my friends and I play in the swing set. I do garden class.
Ah, garden class. Okay.
So We go in the forest. So basically, there's the orchard where the proposed vineyard is, and then there's a fence line, and then there's a redwood forest. And me and my garden class go and we harvest mushrooms, most of the mushrooms we harvest we eat. So, yeah.
Oh, amazing! So really, you are very involved with the natural setting then around the school.
Yeah.
So any spraying or anything like that would affect it, because it would would actually fall on those things you pick and play with.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. That's very very interesting. By the way, we're speaking with the Water Trough Children's Alliance, and they are a group that's been formed of five different school campuses out on Water Trough, and they're concerned about the Paul Hobbs Winery, which is going in there, which is a a conventional winery. Now, at the meeting, there was some confusion. The word sustainability, I don't know how that, where that comes in when it comes to pesticides and spraying and things. I'm not sure. Could you? I was confused over that. About
The word sustainable, sustainable farming practices. And there was a couple of farmers and growers that came up and said it quite well. And maybe even Ernie was one who said, you know, sustainable farming just means the farmer can do whatever they want because there's no way to certify that. There's no way to regulate that or to monitor sustainable. I mean, we hope that everyone with their best intentions is using that word responsibly, but I fear otherwise. You know, it's not if you want to, yes. And Estrella just handed me the Paul Hobbs Winery pesticide use report from for his other properties in North Sebastopol, and there's nothing sustainable about this. I mean, it's indicated on here that there's the from the Pesticide Action Network that there's five bad actors that they use on their property currently. Not to mention, you know, the Roundup and Power Max and herbicides and. Oh, I'm sorry. It's four.
Four.
Yeah, Montana just told me I can't count. Oh, dear. So, so it's four. I mean, there's nothing sustainable about this excessive use of pesticides. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing sustainable about digging deep wells and drying up our aquifers and cutting off our habitat, our wildlife corridors. I mean, you put up the deer fencing and then the deer have nowhere to go. And so there's multiple problems and multiple reasons that this is not sustainable.
Right. Well, another thing that came up was that somebody mentioned, I don't know if it was the Ag Commission or somebody mentioned that even organic growers spray and use pesticides. I was confused about issue.
It's like, I guess the word semantics, you know, it's like tomato, tomato. So when you are a certified organic farmer, you have organic, meaning coming from the earth, pesticides, herbicides that you can use that are organic, approved by CCOF standards. They're also regulated as to when you can apply them and how much you can apply them. So, you know, by conventional farming methods, there's no standard as to what you can or can't spray or how much you can spray it. And so when you are certified organic, yes, there is spraying, but when we're talking conventional versus organic, conventional means the use of synthetic chemical pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides. And those do not break down naturally back into the soil. They kill everything, even the beneficial insects. And I believe Craig got up and talked about IPM, integrated pest management, as an alternative to using even organic approved sprays, which is absolutely fantastic. That's what we need to do. We need to bring in the beneficial insects and help to balance that imbalance.
I just want to add one thing to that on a more technical note, You, as a non-organic farmer, you are limited by the agricultural commissioner as to what pesticides you can apply if they're under a restricted pesticide label. You also have to follow the directions of the label, and you also can't apply them if it's in a situation where there's a lot of wind. However, we were informed by the agricultural commissioner that due to budget cuts, they're having a hard time enforcing some of the things that they are allowed to enforce. So it's not a total free-for-all by any means, but it's hard for them to manage everything with the small staff that they have.
Right. Yeah, that's what we've seen, obviously, how you don't have to deregulate to make things not being checked. You just cut the budgets. It does the same thing, basically. We're talking about something we can't really see, and I was looking at an old, actually from a couple of years ago, Sebastopol bi-monthly, the Sebastopol Toxics Education Program leaflet, and it had the healthcare cost for children's toxic exposure is almost $80 billion a year in America, it's stating. So obviously, we've got chemicals, and they are having an effect on children specifically because they're more susceptible? Have you done any research on that side of that?
Yeah, I was going to, and Estrella is probably going to be able to add a lot more to this, but children are definitely more at risk. Hmm. They're not little adults. And their nervous systems, because they're developing, they can actually have damage that's permanent. And lead is a big player in that. The other thing about children is they, by nature, their behavior makes them more susceptible to pesticide exposure because they play in the dirt and they put their hands in their mouth. And that this is stuff that's coming from the EPA. This is not stuff I'm sort of, you know, making up on the fly here. And then also I was reading that from the EPA stuff that they actually have a larger percentage of skin mass than adults do, which makes their susceptibility higher. So I don't know if Estrella wants to add anything. Stepped in there. So I just was going to say they aren't little adults and they are more susceptible. And things like lead are really not debated to be a toxin for children or really anybody. Hmm. It's the levels that are going to be debated. And you're going to have a wide variation of interpretation in those levels. And that's where comprehensive testing would help. And then you can choose a standard by which you want them evaluated.
And why don't you let everyone know how to get in contact with you?
So we have a website, and that URL is www.watertroughchildrensalliance.weebly.com. Now, there's no punctuations and no spaces, and Weebly is spelled W-E-E-B-L-Y. And you can contact us that way. We are still forming our reality, so we're, you know, not sure about giving out our personal phone numbers over the video, but we have lots of means of contact via that website. Our email address to send us an email is watertroughchildrensalliance@gmail.com. So that's on the website as well. And also on the website is a lot of information about how you can get involved, from anything from just checking out our website to become informed to stepping it up, sign the petition, and joining our email list so you can get updates about what we're working on. Talk to your friends, talk to parents, talk to other people in the county. I mean, we're looking forward to creating some county-wide ordinances that the agricultural commissioner can then use for enforcement. And so we're hoping to take it that broad. We're not just looking at our four schools in the long term. We're also looking for folks who are interested in really committing to help us. So we need people who have experience with media, administration, legal, any sort of science research or agricultural expertise, and especially lobbying, coalition building, and any administration and clerical help. We've got some. We're all at our wits' end, working as hard as we can. Most of us work. All of us have children, and we're doing our best to fit in what we can where we can. And another thing that you can do is call your district supervisor and express your concern. I don't know the phone numbers, but I think we have a list of them. we'll give out a list here of all the folks in the different districts. And this is on our website as well. You've got Susan Gorin in the first district, David Rabbit in the second district, Shirley Zane in the third district, Mike McGuire in the 4th District, and here, Efren Carrillo in the 5th District. And the phone number for all of them is 707-565-2241. That's 565-2241. And please, please call and express your concern and your collaboration with us. Thank you.
Oh, excellent. And, oh, please, Cassandra.
Can I just add one thing to that? We do have active farmers, people who are participating in farming for a living, involved in our cause right now, and we would welcome more participation. We are in no way, in any sense of the word, against farming, clearly. And we heard a lot of really good information on Wednesday. We're taking it to heart. We're not, you know, we really want participation. And if we move forward with buffer zones, agricultural representatives have to be at the table.
Yes, exactly. Oh, well, that's it. A buffer zone, obviously that's there because of wind drift. And I was just looking at this report from 97, Time for a Change, Pesticides and Wine Grapes in Sonoma County. And just one, the National Research Council in 93 characterized the drift from agricultural applications as considerable, ranging from 5% under optimal low wind to an enormous 60% under more typical conditions. So you're talking a lot of those chemicals drifting. I mean, we're not just talking about 1 or 2% drifting around. You're talking about some serious poundage going on.
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, there's, you know, I had looked up a bunch of numbers, and I just, my brain started swirling about the pounds per year, and I can't find it right now. I just found it. So this is from 2009 in Sonoma County for wine grapes. It's gross pounds is 1,995,710 gross pounds of pesticide used, of the top all pesticides used on grape wines. And then the next one down is apples. Mm. And apples comes in as second place with 59,000 pounds of gross pesticide use in Sonoma County.
So that's a lot less.
And the acreage. And it is a lot less. And, you know, I've heard a lot about how bad apples are and how better grapes will be. But, you know, from the pesticide reports here, they sure are using a whole lot more pesticides than we are. And, you know, to speak briefly to the acreage, the agricultural acreage, if I can find that in my papers. There's over 60,000 acres of wine grapes in Sonoma County. And, you know, of that 60,000, there's only 678 organic acres. Mm. Everything else is conventionally grown.
Wow.
You know, it's also, you know, we have food crops. Our food crops in Sonoma County, there's over 12,000 acres of food crops. And that includes everything with olives, apples, strawberries, figs, you know, vegetables and grain and forage. Mm-hmm. And of that, we have over... Yeah, this is from the 2011 crop report, I should mention.
Oh, pretty recent, yeah.
Yeah, so from that, we have over 7,500 acres are organic. So over half of our food crops in Sonoma County are already organic, which is fantastic news. Mm. And I said this on Wednesday, that, you know, the wine grape acres, they're holding all... They're the big players in the agricultural community here in Sonoma County. We know that. It's wine country. But, you know, it's enough already. And they, you know, with only 1% of all of their crops being organic, it's time to do more, you know.
1%. Yeah, that's pathetic.
It really is.
By anybody's count.
You know, I don't want to hear the excuses, it's so expensive to go organic. These are wine growers. I don't think money's an issue.
Well, you know, one thing looking a number of years ago about growing crops and things, I don't know if you looked at it, is crop insurance, because the insurers require them to use the chemicals to save their crops. So I'm wondering how that has played into this whole thing, or if that's maybe another avenue to work at.
No, I don't know specifically. I think that the bigger picture here is biodiversity. I mean, how to stop, you know, monocrops lead to more insurance, lead to more pesticide use, lead to more of, you know, you need crop insurance when that's all you have is all your eggs in one basket.
Right.
You know, you need something to be insured that you're not going to lose everything. So if we go back to a more diverse agricultural system that we had historically here in Sonoma County, if we can move back to that, or not even move back to that, we can just put a moratorium on future vineyards. I mean, 60,000 acres, we're beating Napa, we won. It's time to stop, you know, we're good now. And then, you know, and then work with those existing vineyards to help them. I mean, in some way, I would hope that there are groups out there that can help to educate. Maybe other organic wine growers can come in and sort of usher in a new phase here and take these help these conventional growers go organic, go biodynamic, you know. Right. Actually be sustainable without just saying it.
Well, that's Mendocino County, a good example of pushing organic grapes. They can manage it. And why not us?
Exactly.
We should be able to do it.
We can do better here.
Yeah.
We can.
really, the next steps, really, you're waiting really for the hammer to fall in terms of the permit being given for the uprooting of the orchard, of the apple orchard. Is that really going back to what's next?
I was mentioning earlier about the long-term goals of our coalition. Indeed, the conversion is daunting, and the potential for chemical toxic exposure is huge there and needs to be mitigated and looked at by agencies that are in place that some claim not to have the authority to deal with, or most are at this point. But our long-term goal, one of our long-term goals, is to get a law that was written into the California legislature in 2002 called AB 947. We're looking into that law. Now, that law states that with the approval of the California Pesticide Regulation Board, any county agricultural commissioner will have the authority to regulate all pesticides within a quarter mile of sensitive use sites. And that is schools, hospitals, other potential things like agricultural worker housing, things like that. And so right now, Sonoma County does not have that ordinance. There are other counties in California that have gone through the process and gotten that approval.
Okay.
But we don't, and we are looking to make sure that that gets put in place. That's one of our big long-term goals.
Have you spoken with any of the supervisors or about working on that yet? Or?
I am virtually speechless about answering that question. We have had nothing, almost nothing, but again, I'm speechless. They are doing nothing. They are not interested in talking with us. They did not show up to our meeting.
Right.
They sent in the agricultural commissioner supposedly as a representative, who he already stated very clearly during both of our meetings that we've had with him, Tony Liniger, that he doesn't have the authority and that we need to appeal to the supervisory board. And then they said, oh, we're sending him in as our rep. And that was pretty shocking.
Yes.
You know, that's why I mentioned calling them and getting them on board with us, because it's ridiculous that they have completely just wanting to wipe their hands of this. Like, I mean, surely it's a controversial issue. Very.
Yes. And that's what they're there for. Yeah, that's exactly right. We pay them the good money to work on.
I do want to say one more thing, this Joy, here about buffer zones. And this is a fun little fact I found. I believe it was through Pesticide Action Network or a crop report. I'm not exactly sure where this is from, but it's in Placer County. They have a 4-mile buffer zone around prune trees to protect them from the application of propanil herbicide by air, and a 100-foot buffer zone around schools. While prunes may be sensitive fruits, they are not the future citizens and leaders of California. Do children not deserve better protection than prunes? I mean, these prunes have a 4-mile buffer zone. We're not asking for that much.
Wow. Yeah, that's bizarre.
It's interesting fact.
Cassandra, you had a...
I was just going to say, in terms of moving forward with buffer zones... the agricultural commissioner, it would start there, most likely. And he has indicated that he would be interested in going forward. It's a countywide thing. It would take a tremendous effort, a lot of people at the table, and a lot of voices would have to be represented.
Right.
And the outcome is unknown. A lot of what you see in other cities, it's not a spray-free zone.
Right.
It's regulated.
Regulated.
There's notice.
Right.
And notice would help a lot, according to the commissioner. That would help him be able to enforce, you know, if he knows when it's happening, he can be there to make sure it happens right.
Right.
You know, at what angle things can be sprayed. Those are the kind of things that doesn't mean that a new ordinance could not be passed that was more comprehensive. But that's what we're have seen thus far from the research we've done.
We're at the point where you're powerless in one way, yet you're feeling empowered in another way. So it's good and bad, but these are the times that test us and make us good citizens, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, I just, someone in our group forwarded an email about an ordinance in Santa Barbara that was just passed, and it was 2 years in the making.
Oh, my goodness.
So, and it addressed things from a slightly different perspective, from a zoning perspective, which may be an option, but I'm just saying it was 2 years in the making, and I'm sure a lot of hard work went into it. So it's not going to happen soon.
Yes, indeed. So if everyone's concerned about, I mean, it's not just children. Obviously, we all live near this and want to live a healthy life. So please contact the Water Trough Children's Alliance and make sure that you do help. Montana would like a word, I think. Thank you.
Okay, so, and with pesticide drift?
Yeah.
What about children with asthma or are allergic to dust?
Mm.
I've had this subject whirling through my mind for...
A week. Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Because you have friends that have asthma because and are allergic
I have
to dust.
Friends that are what my mom said.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's it affects people very deeply, in other words. Yes, thank you. And but no, thank you very much for taking this up. And keep at it.
You're welcome. And I just wanted to put our website out there one more time. www.watertroughchildrensalliance.weebly.com. That's W-E-E-B-L-Y. And there are no punctuations or spaces. So please contact us and get informed and join our cause.
Yes, indeed. So we've had Joy, Montana, Cassandra, and Estrella from the Water Trough Children's Alliance in there to talk about this serious subject of in this area of conversions to grapes, to conventional grapes, and the effect it has on the surroundings, and in this case, on children and schools. So there's lots of issues, obviously farmers and politicians, children's parents, everyone has their own way of looking at this. So thank you for coming into the studio and giving us a great input.
Thank you very much.
And yes, maybe next week, please give us an input if that, whenever the permit is issued, let us know, keep us up with it.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you.
So thank you very much. And we'll go out with a little bit of Cat Stevens and Where Do the Children Play?
clouds fill the air. But will you keep on building higher till there's no more room up there? Will you make us laugh? Will you make us cry? Will you tell us when to live? Will you tell us when to die? Tell me, why do the children play?